Welcome to The Good Stuff with the Sonoma County Wine Growers. I am Virginie Boone, alongside Carissa Cruz, President and CEO of The Wine Growers. We're here, as always, to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine.
There's lots of that.
I know.
Lots of enjoying.
Happy summer wine enjoying, right?
I know. Isn't it amazing? June.
I know.
We're
June is great.
June. I know. It's excellent. And there's so much going on. So when I think of summer, I think of baseball, of course, and the Giants, which we have a great partnership with.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been doing some fun stuff with them lately. We actually just this past week, we joined Evan Goldstein, their master sommelier, to do kind of ballpark food pairings with Sonoma County wines, which is so much fun. Because I think, you know, that's been part of what the sports partnerships have done for us, and I think we're seeing more and more activations around that from wine brands like, you know, Kendall Jackson and La Crema and Copper Cane and others, is to really sort of debunk any myths that you have to have this 10-course meal paired with wine. You can have a ballpark hot dog with some amazing wine, and
yeah,
it's fun and great.
I think I kind of prefer that to a 10-course meal with wine.
I was going to say, do you really like hot dogs?
Yeah, well, okay.
So,
okay.
And I am kind of known for liking a good hot dog. So, yeah, so we were, just this past week, we got to, for season ticket holders, they offered sort of a plus-up experience at the Giants game. And we had partners, Kenwood Winery, Kokomo, Small Vines, and Rodney Strong Vineyards join us for some fun matchups and pairings. And I think a crowd favorite is Chardonnay with the Crazy Crab sandwiches. So,
I mean, the fact that it's called Crazy Crab, not just crab, Crazy Crab.
It kind of just makes you smile. So Crazy Crab with Crazy Shard.
Wasn't that their mascot for a little while, a Crazy Crab?
I sort of have a weird
childhood memory slash
like
trauma
nightmare, I was
about,
gonna say.
About Crazy Crab.
Equity characters gone wrong.
Yeah.
Mascots gone wrong.
Yeah.
No, so that's super fun, and we're doing a lot of activations with the Giants. Kind of in June, kind of kicks off. Obviously, we started with Fan Fest back in March with them, but now, well into lots of pouring opportunities and partnership opportunities with the team through the season.
Yeah.
So, and we keep teasing it, but eventually there will be a really big announcement.
Okay, well, but it's a good thing we have a weekly show on which to make that announcement when it comes.
Exactly. So we are pre-recording this week's episode, everyone, because we are literally, our Sonoma County Wine Grower team is at Aspen Food and Wine, the Aspen Classic, this weekend. And so it's their 41st anniversary.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, what a good run. I mean, and that was the event we really modeled the Healdsburg Wine and Food Experience on and after, about just bringing incredible wines, food, and sort of all the artisans behind that as well. So excited to be headed to Aspen. Last year, we were the partners for the Publisher's Party at the Top of the Mountain, which is like one of the can't-miss events of the Aspen Food and Wine Weekend. But this year, we are the partner for the Welcome event. So we have six winery partners joining us, and we will be the sole wine region for the Welcome. So last year we were kind of bookending kind of the big Publisher's Party, and this year we're the, hello everyone, welcome to Aspen. Have Sonoma County wine.
Yeah, well, and Sonoma County Wine Growers has been participating in Aspen for years as well.
Years. I mean, since I started, so 12 years.
Yeah,
so 12 years at least, so. But we have a great show today, and kind of follows up, and maybe Virginie, you can mention it a little bit, but you recently wrote a column for our Good Stuff column that goes out about vineyards, wineries celebrating 100 plus years.
Yeah.
So what were some of the highlights of that?
Well, I mean, some of it was kicked off by the fact that Sarah's Ranch, which is down kind of near Glen Ellen, is celebrating its 100th year. And that got me really thinking, and thank you for your prompts as well, of like, there's a lot of family businesses here that are 100 years old, which is remarkable. So started to dig into that. I think it will be ongoing, but certainly Sanchetti is another one, guests of the show.
Yep.
Fappiano, very longstanding. And
Petroncelli.
Petroncelli, another
guest.
She's
been on the
show.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of 100 plus.
Yeah.
And that continues today.
It
well,
does.
Nearly 100.
Nearly.
We're getting there.
Almost.
We're getting there. So, yeah, our guest today will also be reaching 100 years in Sonoma County farming very soon. So we'll talk to them about that.
Yeah, so we have the San Giacomos on today. So it should be a great show. Talk about farming, sustainability, their new wine, new-ish wine brand.
Yep.
And all of that when we come back from the break.
Back on The Good Stuff. I'm Virginie Boone here with Carissa Cruz, and our guests today are Steve and Mike San Giacomo, both third generation wine growers and partners at San Giacomo Family Wines. Welcome.
Welcome, Ben. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're excited to be here.
Yeah, I guess you're so excited to be here. Like, you're welcoming me, which I appreciate, actually.
Well, no, but did you notice? I'm like, we'll probably get into family business, but they both were like, who's going to speak first? And then they both spoke over each other.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of thinking this is the sum of what it's like to be brothers working in business together.
And Italians.
And Italian.
Well. Yeah, we like to.
Yeah. So. Okay. Well, you know, I actually don't know the answer to this, but who is older?
Actually, I am.
Okay. So, Mike, you're the older brother.
Yes.
And Steve, yeah.
We have sister Mia in between us. So
okay.
There's some, three of us. There's some separation. So Mia keeps us grounded.
Yeah, she's the raff of the family. Yeah, she's like, ah, man, two brothers. That's rough.
Yeah, yeah. Older, younger.
Yeah, poor Mia.
Growing up with us. We might have to have a therapy session with Mia on air.
Exactly. Totally, I love it. That'd actually be
tell us the real truth. Yeah. All right. Well, we were talking a little bit at the beginning of just covering Sonoma County is a lot about covering family businesses, as you are both well aware. It's also covering businesses that have been around at this point almost 100 years. Your family is getting near that point because you've started farming in Sonoma County 1927.
Yeah, we're almost, we call it our march to 100. We're already planning the party.
It's a few Where's my invite? Where's my save the
well,
date?
Well, there's still, it's in process.
There's a plan.
Right?
Yeah.
I think
it's going to be multiple. I mean, we start talking about people have wonderful ideas on what we should do. So we're jotting them down.
Okay.
So, but no, definitely we're, 1927 is when our grandfather came over. And so we're, so proud to be farming still today here in Sonoma County.
Well, why don't you start with that? So your grandfather comes over. So from where and
Genoa,
how did
Italy,
get here?
Northern Italy, in the Genoa region, and he comes over. His father came over first and worked in San Francisco in the Telegraph Hill and the quarries and stuff where they're building all the beautiful hills of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And so he found out that San Francisco's California, United States, is a land of opportunity. So he goes back to Italy and wants to bring his wife and 10 children to the United States.
That's a lot to consider. 10 kids.
10 kids.
Yeah.
And so he obviously, his mother was not game for that for obvious reasons, taking 10 kids across the sea on a boat. But he was the oldest of 10, our Grand Vittorio. And so he told the dad, go to United States, is a land of opportunity. Borrows $200 from his family, comes over, starts working in a vegetable garden in Alameda. He loved farming. That was his passion that he did in Italy. And then quickly thereafter, him and some Italians start a garbage business in San Francisco. So that's always a joke. Imagine an Italian in the garbage business, right? So him and eight of them started Scavenger Protective Union, which was in San Francisco. And then, that was, what he was, it wasn't his passion, though. I mean, his passion was always farming. So
is garbage anyone's passion, I wonder?
I don't know. It's my brother and I, we always joke about during farming with Mother Nature brings its challenges. We always rain during harvest and we're like, why did he get out of the garbage business?
So.
You're like that actually looks nice now.
It's recession proof.
That is true.
It's so those elements. So, but he used to come up to San Francisco Sonoma, Sonoma Valley. They have the Boyce Hot Springs have these mineral baths that he loved, and he'd come up, take trains, he'd boat, train up. So the train used to go by our ranch, our home ranch, where we've been since 1927. So the ranch came for sale, and he had this like epiphany: I want to get back into farming. This is what I love to do. And so he sold out of the garbage business, sold his interests, and he bought a ranch, our home ranch, a 55.5-acre orchard right in Sonoma Valley. We still have the deed. It's amazing when people for our tasting room come, there's a handwritten deed, there's a check. We still have the check, and it's all, we always laugh because it says 55.5 acres more or less, and it's handwritten.
Right. Yeah. So yeah. Precision viticulture was
Lot lines. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. That was it. So but yeah, and then he came. Yeah,
can ahead. I just ask, like, what, and I mean, are there stories that have been passed down, what was Sonoma Valley like back then? I mean, so the train's coming through and he buys this plot of land. I mean, were there neighbors or anyone else? Do you know?
It was very rural. I mean, as you imagine, I mean, the agriculture was still the focus of the union. It was not just all, you know, the original ranch was, you know, orchards. It was prunes, apples, cherries. But there were some dairies. There were some people growing wheat and stuff. So our Caterina Ranch was a wheat ranch before that. Mm-hmm. There was a kind of diversity agriculture in Sonoma Valley. It was obviously a lot slower and a lot, you know, more down home. things that when you're a kid aren't very attractive, but as you get older, you're like, wow, that's really a great place to grow up.
Yeah,
right.
Then actually, the peach originally, we have a picture of the mid 1800s of a peach orchard, and actually, the original home ranch was award winning. Howe and Hall Edendale Peach Ranch was award winning, and we actually found some old clippings of it. So
it was called Edendale.
That Edendale. Was the, Howe and Hall were owners. It's called our Edendale.
Okay.
Home ranch.
Because now you have a wine with the Edendale label.
Yeah. So we have
the
San Giacomo, which is our estate brand, and we have a kind of a sister brand called Edendale that pays homage to the original name.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. But there had been wine grapes in kind of that part of Sonoma Valley, Carneros, before your grandfather came, but were there, this ranch in particular never had wine grapes before the San Giacomo's came?
I think there was, on the turn of, when you call it the turn, everything's the turn, right? There was actually a small vineyard, I think a couple hundred vines out there that, rumor is it, which my dad and uncles and aunt used to talk, he used to try and make wine out of, but he didn't, his patience was not very high, so it turned into vinegar really quick. And our grandmother is an Italian cook, amazing, and she loved nothing better than good vinegar. So she'd encourage it because she knew it never turned into wine, and she'd get amazing vinegar.
She did have great vinegar. I think he'd eventually have, once the wine became vinegar, then he would grab a barrel and run up to Dry Creek and grab some Zinfandel.
Okay. Yeah, there were other sources.
Yeah,
but in the basement, it was very much, you know, old school European. He would buy a barrel and then with a spigot and then slowly bleed off a little bit of wine each night.
Okay, and so then the generation in between your grandparents and you are four siblings. Is that right?
Four siblings. Our dad Angelo, and then he had sister Lorraine, brother Bob, and our other brother Buck. He's the only one still holding down the fort, still alive, 90 plus years old, great genes. Those four were, our grandfather was smart businessman. I think his love for farming was obviously prevalent, but he quickly realized that when he had, you know, he married our grandmother in 1928, a year after, and that every kid that he would have, our aunt was the oldest, and our dad Angelo, then Buck, and then Bob. He would grow. That's how he grew to, the whole the family holdings. His joke was every kid he'd have, he'd buy another ranch. It was all neighbors. Like, just keep going down from west to east. So the four of them, you know, basically. And he was actually really good about bringing the next generation along. I think he really realized that he's smart, because if kids make your life a lot easier, they can go do the farming, prune the pear trees. And so at an early age, he really handed the reins over to my dad and uncles and aunt. It was a pear, obviously pear fruit tree, but he was really big on, but he still kept an eye on it. He had his routine of, you know, playing Pedro you know, he still would, you know, do hit what things he liked, right? But he had
well, he earned it. At that point, he earned to only have to do what he liked to do. I think that's good for him.
Absolutely. So, but yeah, but those are the four generations that, or the four siblings that were the second generation that really helped even kind of enhance the family business with, you know, acquiring more land for pears. And so we grew to be one of the largest pear growers in Northern California. So at that
time.
So
for fresh pears, or were you canning them, or what was happening to them?
It's for canning.
Yeah.
So, you know, they really grew a good quality pear, but from the timing to the market, you know, the river area comes in first. So they got the fresh market first, and then Lake County second, they got the late market. So we were kind of at the point where the market's kind of saturated. Mm-hmm. So really canning was really where we were at. But from a quality standpoint, it was a really good pear. There just wasn't farmers markets at that time. There wasn't an organic culture. And so no one was willing to pay a premium for a better pear.
Yeah.
And pears like warmer weather, though. I mean, they just, and it's the cooler weather they would pre-ripen. It just, they fought that hard. So. But what cooler weather wood really is good for is wine grapes.
Right?
So, and they
enter wine grapes.
So they quickly realized. So they grew to be one of the largest pear growers, and then all this Mike alluded that the canneries were shutting down. They kind of saw the handwriting on the wall because you could get fresh fruit year round. And so with that, they planted their Green Acres Vineyard in 1969. Kind of dipped their toe into viticulture. Good friends with Fred Cundy, was my dad's roommate, best friend. He kind of, helped, you know, encourage them and kind of took them under his wing to like learn the viticulture side of it. They spent a lot of time up in Kenwood, the northern part of Sonoma Valley, learning. And so planted Green Acres in 1969, saw that you could actually, there's a future of wine, you know, wine grapes. There's, you know, some brands of Aaron Sebastian, Louis Martini, all the ones that around the area that they were selling to. And then the late 70s, early 80s, it was really, the cannery business was really suffering. So they pulled out all 400 acres of pear trees in 81, 82, and mortgaged all the ranches and said, we're just going to go in on wine grapes. And then they were fortunate as it was, you know, the wine industry grew. As we know, mid-80s, we all know the wine's good for you, which we need another story on.
I know,
someone needs to make that story. Wine's still good for you.
Wine's good for you.
It hasn't changed.
It hasn't changed. So,
But what a leap of faith. I mean, I think that's always the story of agriculture, but to rip out that much acreage to plant something somewhat
less proven,
like a slam dunk. Plus, I think, I mean, it was early, your family was early on in Chardonnay, which was not what it is now.
For sure. I do think when the pear trees went, we get this question a lot. What was it like? I mean, we grew up on one of our orchards, and it was sad to see like just big bulldozers coming in and putting all these trees in big piles. And but I think it was almost like, looking back, a sense of relief. So I think for my dad and uncles and aunt, I mean, they struggled, you know, farming and making it work. And I think there was like this sense of sadness, and then but there was a sense of relief that there was actually hope. They saw that the wine industry, there was a future in it. They found another agricultural crop that potentially you could turn into a multi-generational business. But having said that, I mean, my grandfather, he was, he planted a lot of them. So, and he was all on board. That was always the joke of like, what did my dad and uncles and what did your dad say about it? And he was a businessman. He realized that we're losing money 3 out of 5 years. And he basically said, you know, pulled the SOBs out.
Yeah, he's like, I don't want to go back to garbage.
We're on it. I gotta
keep it tame.
Yeah, he didn't have the romantic notion that we do 100 years later.
I think it was hard for him. They kept one little small orchard for him to
keep him busy, keep him out of trouble.
Keep him busy, but orchard, yeah.
And he pruned that until his last year. I think it was a huge faith, and I do a leap of faith by, you know, the previous generations. You know, they had put all their efforts into growing these orchards, especially pears. You know, there's a saying, they say you plant pears for your heirs because it takes so long to get them. So when they were pulling out some of these orchards, they were in their prime, but there was no market for the fruit. So, you know, that was a hard point. But, you know, as my brother alluded to, you know, sustainability is part of being able to pay the bills. And it wasn't working.
Yeah. For sure. And that it's similar to a lot of the crops. I mean, we're seeing that happen right now to the apples here. I mean, they've been in major decline. And now with the last of the canneries moving out of the region, who knows how long, how many acres will stay viable here. So, I mean, it's just kind of the way it goes. So a lot of risk taking, but also a lot of foresight and really good foresight on the wine grape industry. So,
yeah, for sure.
And so the two of you grew up on that home ranch. Is that kind of where your family was based the whole
time? Yeah, so we were down the road. It's everything. All of our majority of our ranches at that time were just in the little small circumference area of Snow Valley. But yeah, we grew up on one of our ranch. We spent a lot of time at our home ranch. That was where my brother, sister, and I spent. I mean, they had a babysitter down the road that we got dropped off a lot there. And so we grew up with our grandfather and, you know, in the orchards and stuff. And Mike's at, you know, pruning pear trees with him, right? I mean,
yeah, that was one of my grandfather's sources of pride was how to prune a tree. And that would talk about when he let my aunt and uncles take over and dad and uncles take over. He was very specific about how he wanted a tree pruned. So you know, one of my earlier memories is him teaching me how to prune, and because I was probably only 6 or 7 at the time, but I was only allowed to prune. I couldn't climb the ladder to prune, so I was pruning the bottom ones from the top.
Right, okay. So, yeah, there were still some rules. All right, well, we will continue with this story about San Giacomo's when we come back on The Good Stuff. We are back on The Good Stuff with our guests, Steve and Mike San Giacomo, third generation wine growers, partners at San Giacomo Family Wines. And when we left before the break, Mike, you were describing how at 6 years old, you were already learning how to prune a pear tree very meticulously, I'm sure, from your grandfather. And then at some point, everything changed. You both went off to college. So you left Sonoma County for college and had some work experience outside of the wine world, but you came back. What brought you back?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it goes back, as I mentioned earlier, each generation, and we get the question a lot of, like, how have you guys been able to transition, you know, having other generations coming in to take over? And I think my dad generation learned to be open to the next generation, just like my grandparents were open for their generation. So my dad and uncles and aunt it was an open door. They were just, please, you know, if this is something you want to pursue and you have passion for, you know, please come back. And so there was never a pressure to come back. We always joke, our grandmother used to say, go be a teacher, go be a doctor, lawyer. You don't want to be a farmer. So, because I think she was testing the waters to make sure that we really wanted to do it. They were just, you know, open arms to come back. And I think a part of their careers where they wanted, just like our grandfather was part of his career, where he wanted that generation to come back and help. And they were pretty, I think Mike came back first and then I came back a few years later. But our dad used to always say, before someone makes you an offer on a job, come talk to me. And I do think they were at the tail end. My dad got married later, so they were at the really tail end of their careers. I think, I know with next generation coming along, that, you know, I think will be more apt for them to kind of go experience some things a little bit before they come back. But I didn't feel pressure to come back, but I knew the clock was ticking for them at their, you know, kind of point of their career that, you know, from a transition standpoint, you know, it was a good opportunity.
Well, I have to ask, did either one of you want to be something else as a kid? Like, did you dream about being a fireman or police officer? I mean, was it always just sort of like, I'm probably going to do this farming thing?
I think for me, it was in my blood, you know, as a young kid growing up on the ranch, just seeing my grandfather, my father, my uncles, and my aunt even, you know, just their role in the ranch. I always wanted to be part of that, you know. As I graduated from college, I did work in San Francisco for a year, knowing in my heart I was going to come back, but I wanted to do something I could see that there was no transit, there was going to be no sabbatical somewhere to leave this.
So I was either going to get the road.
I was going to get it done now if I want to do something different for a brief period of time. And as it turned out, you know, it was a great 1 year, and to work for somebody different, to do something totally different, really kind of makes you appreciate what you're doing. And part of it is, you know, I kind of love what I do, so that helps, you know. Don't love every day, but
sure.
I think it's important in farming that the next generation comes back and learns from the previous generation. Yeah. So it's great to go out, get your own ideas and learn, but there's so much to how you farm. We all farm our ranches differently. We all have a similar philosophy, but we all have their own things that work in our particular ranch that don't in others. So I mean, I cherish the years of coming back, thankfully, because, you know, they were older when, you know, our uncle, we only got, you know, 10 plus years of farming with them. Thankfully, our dad and other uncle, we got longer, but we learned so much from them. So I think that's one word with one thing to learn is to get that next generation back when they're, when the timing is right, so they can really learn, you know, all the things that, you know, we've learned from our previous generation that can, you know, 100 years of farming, right? You want to pass it on, right?
Well, and maybe you guys haven't actually mentioned, but so now how many acres of vineyards do you actually farm, and where do those grapes go?
Yeah, so we farm 1,600 acres in Sonoma County across 14 different vineyards. We sell to over 85 wineries of all
that's
different
a lot
sizes.
Of partners. Yeah,
a lot of from, you know, 2-ton clients up to hundreds of ton clients. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of them are, you know, we have, you know, over 10 that we've been selling to for over 30 years.
Wow.
And we have over 30 we've been selling to for almost 20 years. So a lot of long-term partnerships. We still have vineyard designates. So we were one of the first to put, you know, vineyard-specific wines in the late 70s. Gunlock Bunchu was one of the first. And we still have that today. We have over 30 wineries that put San Giacomo on the label.
Maybe just mention how that works for vineyard-designated wines. Like, do the wineries decide? Do you decide? Jointly decide?
And has that changed over time, maybe?
From the very beginning, we never really solicited it. Since wineries had come to us, and even the Bunchus and some of the early ones, Sainsbury's and so forth, that had done that, you know, we obviously embraced it. It was a great recognition to, like, hey, they're going to appreciate your efforts of what you've done in the field that go into the bottle. So it's a collaboration, sorry, between the two. And that's the nice thing about it. So even now, as we gain new clients that come in that want to do a vineyard designate, it's a sit down and decide what they're doing, what they're trying to accomplish, and it really becomes collaborative.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure having your name on the bottle, I mean, your name stands for something, a quality in farming, quality in relationships, so probably very important to sort of ensure your partners are headed in the same direction and share that value.
Yeah, and there's a different, I mean, because consumers, I mean, you know, why did vineyard designates become what they are? Because consumers really got into terroir-specific wines. They wanted to know where the grapes were coming from inside of each AVA, each county and stuff. So it kind of started this boom of, like, consumers have, and then you create a following because there's a familiarity and, you know, the wine's risky enough for consumers to go out there and choose off a shelf. And when you can relate to a specific brand or vineyard, it creates this, you know, trust, right?
So. Absolutely.
So at what point did you decide that you wanted your own, not only your own vineyard designate, but your name on a wine label as a producer?
So yeah, our estate brand started 2016. And I think it was not a question of if, but when. And I think my dad's generation was very transparent. We are not, if you guys want to do it, we will support you 100%.
But they had no interest.
they did their part, right?
Yeah,
every
generation.
They created their legacy with the vineyard. You know, all the vineyard holdings and all the vineyard designates. And I think it was, you know, I think we realized that for next generation, there's 7 coming in the next generation. I have 2 boys. Mike has 2 boys and a girl. My sister's got a boy and a girl that could provide some opportunity. But most importantly, I think it was we really wanted to have consumers see our expression of our wines, our grapes through wine, and just kind of from a part of, you know, every wine's art, right? And so is grape growing's art. So it's an opportunity for us to consumers see our grape growing art and our wine art coming together. And so it's, you know, something that we were excited to do. And it's been a great journey. And you know, it's been a, you know, every journey has its, you know, bumps in the road. I mean, we've learned very quickly, and that, you know, we're making small amounts of wine, keeping it super high quality, and so that's the goal.
But how did you, you had, you know, great confidence in the grapes, of course, because you're farming them yourselves, but making the wine, you went out and found a winemaker. How did you decide who to entrust with this?
Yeah, so James McPhail, we chose as our winemaker. And part of it is just because, you know, he's worked with us for 20 plus years, just timing with his career, where he was and where we were with this whole, you know, wine creation. Plus, he's a, you know, number one, he's a great winemaker. his experience. He's a multi-generational Sonoma County family, and he's a good guy. He's really easy to work with, which,
also good.
Which is a big component to it. So,
important to like who you work with.
Absolutely, definitely.
Yeah, because it's a bit, I mean, this is a big jump for your generation and for the family, for the family name and for these grapes. So,
you want
it to be good.
I was going to say, what was it like trying your wines for the first time or seeing San Giacomo wines out on a wine list? Or
I think it was pretty exciting. You know, I think we were anxious to taste the first wines.
Yeah.
And we were, you know, we're pleased, very pleased. I mean, James does a great job. I mean, so we're very lucky to get James. We feel for all the reasons Steve just mentioned, but it was a little sense of pride and stuff. It was exciting.
And I do think it has made us better farmers. I mean, wineries have been always very transparent with us in the process, but now we get to see it through the whole, from start to finish. And I mean, we just went through a tasting with James of all our blocks, and you know, and we learned so much.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will get a little bit more detail on which wines you have.
Awesome.
Here on The Good Stuff with Steve and Mike San Giacomo. And when we left, we were talking about, you know, you started your own wine brand with your name on the label. What wines are you making currently?
So we're currently making a Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. Those are the two varieties that we planted in 1969. We planted four varieties. We planted some Cab and some other Riesling and stuff, but we quickly realized that our area is really good for Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. So we're honoring those varieties, as those are two main varieties we farm. And we have five different Chardonnays and five different Pinot Noirs. So all different vineyard expressions. They're all four of them. There's four vineyard designates of Chardonnay and four vineyard designates of Pinot Noir. Then we do a coastal bottling, which is an expression of all the vineyards kind of together from an appellation standpoint, and we're actually introducing some clonal series Pinot Noirs as well. So we do have a Cabernet, I have to mention, from we have Napa Valley Cabernet as well. So, but we're known for Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. Those are the two main varieties. So.
And an awesome rosé.
Some rosé.
So, yep. Very pretty.
And we're doing a Sauvignon Blanc.
Oh, nice. That's news.
That's okay. There you go.
Breaking news. We love that.
Yeah.
All right. So tell us a little bit more about how people can taste these wines for themselves, come see the home ranch, come experience San Giacomo.
Yeah. So part of our inspiration to, you know, do the estate brand was to really open doors for consumers to come and see, you know, farming in Sonoma County, a multi-generational, you know, farming business, almost 100 years of farming. And so it's, you know, it's a very hands-on experience. You come in and you get to see our proud display of all our winery partners that, you know, we've been selling to for multiple years. And then we get them out in the vineyard and we really educate them on what's happening. It's like, what's happening in the vineyard, right? Yeah. And it's like, from a seasonal standpoint, we really want them to understand, you know, there's actually pruning, bud break, bloom, and then, you know, obviously harvesting. And it's an opportunity really to, and it, guess where wine starts?
Yeah,
exactly. In the vineyard.
With farmers.
And then they get to go on our terrace and taste, you know, a flight of wines.
And open every day.
So we're open 7 days a week. Nice. It is by appointment only, like almost every winery is in Sonoma. But we always can call. If you drop in, we may have an appointment available. So it's basically from, you know, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. We do have different. We have a bar tasting, which is you know, kind of a quicker tasting. You know, our signature tasting experience is 90 minutes, so not everyone has 90 minutes. I recommend that one because you really get to learn about what is farming is and what's growing wine grapes. And we have basically, you know, we do have some corporate. We'll do corporate events too. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of opportunity for corporate retreats now are becoming a big thing.
Well, and it's not only where the vineyard is, it's where you have a lot of your tractors and your equipment. I mean, this really is like the working office in my experience anyway.
It is. That's right. There's not a castle there. It's a working farm.
It's a working farm.
Our shop, our equipment's there, kind of our headquarters and where everything originates from. So, yes, no, that you're part of the tasting room is part of the office.
Yeah, and the tractors have dirt on them.
When the tractors are working, the consumers love it.
I know.
We try to be quiet. They're like, no, more.
No, I want more tractor.
Are you doing this for us? You're like, no, I'm farming.
Exactly.
This is not a show.
That's exactly it.
Well, people can find you at sangiacomowines.com, sangiacomowines.com, sangiacomowines.com. So that'd be how they find out all about your tastings, your hours.
Tasting hours, you can book tastings on the website. If you have trouble, call. We have lots of phones.
People actually answer the phones.
I know. We have a bat. We call it the bat phone. They have to carry with them all the time. So it's on because if someone leaves the desk, right? You never know.
I know. You never know.
But
and that's also a place to find out about some of the events you have.
Yeah.
We have a
Roberts Road 25th anniversary celebration coming up in June 23rd. We're doing our Katerina Gardens, a little garden spot we have. We have a big luncheon coming up in August 11th, I believe. I should know these. And then we wrap it up with a big harvest party to celebrate.
So much fun. Well, I've been to your tasting room a number of times. Always a great time, great wines, obviously a great family story.
Yeah, go visit. Go see the vineyard, go see the tractors. We want to thank you both, Steve and Mike, for joining us today. Go to sangiacomowines.com.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
We are back to wrap things up on the good stuff and yet another great show, Carissa.
I know. Well, you know, Steve Sangiacomo is one of the first growers I met literally in Sonoma County was part of the group interviewing me, the round table interviewed me for the Sonoma County Wine Growers job originally. So it's just been, I've gotten to know their family pretty well over the years, and what a great story. And we were talking when we kind of started the show just about families, the longevity of some of our farming families here, the generations, the crops that they've sort of grown to sort of sustain agriculture literally in our backyard. And the Sangiacomos are a shining example of all of those things.
So. Yeah, I would agree. That adaptability that we keep coming back to with so many of our guests,
Keep going. Figure it out. I mean, and just think about, thank goodness, wine grapes. I mean, and the risk that you take going from pears to wine grapes decades ago.
Yeah.
With this hope that Sonoma County becomes a wine region that matters and has relevance and is important to consumers. So,
right.
So much. But so many good wines, too, coming from there. I mean, I think that's the cool thing about all of these farmers is they have, now their own wine brand, but also have for years been one of the original vineyard-designated vineyards with Sangiacomo. So I think we should celebrate that.
Yeah, I completely agree. And what I'm always struck by whenever I visit the Sangiacomos down at their home ranch is they'll show all the different wine labels that use their grapes. And it's an impressive wall, right? And
it
to
is.
Build those relationships, to keep those relationships. So I'm going to honor with my wine, one of the winemakers I know that has been working with their fruit for a long time, Jeff Gaffner, and his brand, Saxon Brown. He buys Green Acres Vineyard Chardonnay. I think he also gets Roberts Road, but love them all. Great Chardonnay winemakers. So I'm going to go with the 21 Green Acres.
Well, I was going to stay also on Chardonnay because I think it's hello summer. and I do love Chardonnay. So, but I am going to do the 2021 Walt Chardonnay.
Lovely.
I was just reading about it because I got 93 points from Wine Spectator recently. So great wine and a great score.
Great winemakers there too. So this is a good setup for our next Tuesday night. Looking forward.
Absolutely. Tuesday night wines. Can't beat those.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on the Good Stuff Hour today. Thank you to our guests from Sonoma County to wherever you are. Remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.